Thank you once again for checking out A Podcast Within a Podcast, What It Takes. On this installment, we will be speaking with a very good friend of mine, Mr. Andy Knight. Andy's a trombone player, lives in the Boston area, but he's been all over and he's done all sorts of different things, and he has really great advice to give and quite insightful into the music industry and the music career that he has. And I often, every time that he and I talk or we write letters to each other, I always learn something new, and I know that he will not steer me wrong, so he won't steer you wrong. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Andy Knight on What It Takes, a Have You Heard podcast. Welcome to a new Have You Heard podcast. We're calling this podcast, Within a Podcast, What It Takes. What It Takes will explore, well, what it takes to make it in the arts and music industry. We will talk with artists and musicians from around the world in various fields about their continuing journey in the arts industry. Our guests will give their advice to people working in the field and to those of us just starting out. Well, join us as we find out what it takes. Andy Knight, somebody that has been in my life for years and years and years. And Andy, it seems like every time that we talk, we always end up talking about the music industry, our careers in music, and just what it takes to make everything come together, especially now that you've been a family man for many years and I'm new to the scene in that way. So things are a little bit different, but just if you can, you're out in the Boston area, but let's give us a little history on your background as a musician.
I started at Indiana University, Miami University, for my undergrad.
Should have taken notes, man.
right. From there, moved to SMU, down in Dallas, Miami University. I studied John Seidel. And then when I moved to SMU, studied with John Kitzman, who is the trombone player for the Dallas Symphony Orchestra for many years. He's just recently retired. While down there, I started working during the summers at the Roundtop Music Festival. I'm playing trombone initially, bass trombone. I switched at SMU from tenor to bass.
Oh, really?
After I'd already, I joke that tenor and alto clef made me switch to bass trombone, but it was really just that I was kind of a tight tenor trombone player, always concerned with playing the high notes and had not really set myself up well to do that. And after switching to bass trombone, that kind of went away. And I don't know if I necessarily, now I like that range more. Hello, Beckett. I'm talking to Rich. There's no picture, so my four-year-old isn't interested.
Yeah.
So now on bass trombone, I can play higher than I used to on tenor trombone. It's just because I think I hitting high Cs no longer became my reason for being. It just kind of relaxed and opened up and all that.
Right.
And then I went to Indiana University after taking a couple years off of school and I was teaching in the public school systems there in Plano, Texas, and teaching. It was about 70 students a week.
Oh my God.
And it was brutal. You had about two kids per class session, and classes were 45 minutes long.
Oh man.
And about halfway, at the beginning of the second year there, I saw one of the horn teachers come out of his room, and he just looked horrible. He looked like he hated it. And I realized that if I stayed there, that's what I was going to be. As much as I'm teaching, it was just, you know, brutal, just churning kids in and out. So after that, I went to Indiana University and studied for the last couple of years that Ed Anderson was there. Those were great lessons. Did you take lessons with him too?
I did. Yeah, I got in between my undergrad and grad degree, I took lessons with him probably once a quarter. And then during my master's degree, I took a lesson here and there with him. Because as a jazz major, I didn't have to take lessons, I guess, to apply with my applied instrument. So I got some lessons with a little bit of everybody, but Ed was certainly mixed in there.
Yeah.
And it was eye-opening. It was pretty amazing.
I think the thing that I really took away from him was the whole idea of conversational playing. Meaning just that, I think we associate playing in the extreme ranges, high or low, with like this physical feat. Yes. And he treated it like it should just be like talking. And if you can just play it like it's no big deal, just relax and play it, it sounds much better. And it sounds, you know, it's one of those things you can encapsulate in 15 seconds and then spend a long time figuring out how to relax and just play it.
Right. You know, there's a few moments in my life where like everything kind of comes together and it's like, man, if I could play like that all the time, my life would be so much easier.
Right.
It doesn't always happen that way. But, you know, do you have any moments like that in your life when you're playing and it's like, this is so easy. And then the next day it just isn't anymore.
Right. Yeah. I remember there's actually one time on stage at Indiana that I was playing Ride of the Valkyrie, and it was getting ready, you know, for the kind of the big trombone moment. And I felt myself sitting up in my chair and leaning forward and getting ready. And then I realized that, no, you know, when I play the best and kind of the biggest and most tone-rich sounds is when I'm relaxed. And so I took a deep breath and I leaned back in my chair and just kind of almost, not slouched, but just kind of relaxed into it. And stuff just sailed out of the horn.
But it's so opposite of like the energy that you want to expel. It's like we have to like gear up for this battle. But really, when you just do everything opposite, it's like the George Costanza of trombone pedagogy, you know. Do everything opposite of what your instincts tell you, and then it will sound great.
Right.
You know?
Well, and especially this year teaching some of my beginning students, I'm always big on really what you're doing when you play trombone, or really most brass instruments, is just blow and let your face figure out what to do with your lips. Because, and I've been saying this a lot to the beginning students, especially this year, is that your lips' job is just to flap. And as much as you can do with your air allows your lips to be as lazy as possible. And, you know, if you're normally doing 25% of the work with your face, if you can get down to 10 or 7 or whatever it is and still get the note, you're getting kind of maximum flappitude, which is the more your lips flap, the more tone you get. Right. So if you're, the more relaxed you are, as long as you're still getting the note, that's probably the best tone.
You're right. Know? Yeah. But it's opposite of what, you know, I think, weren't you telling me once, like you were, so you can get people to like blow air freely and then buzz on a mouth, flap their lips or whatever, and then buzz on a mouthpiece, and then you put it on the horn and they tense up and just get this horrible sound out of the instrument.
Yeah.
Like, why is that?
I don't know. I'm still grappling with that. I've got, like, almost all of my fourth and fifth grade students right now have gone. I start the first few lessons with just blow. It's nothing else. Just blow. Let the instrument give you the buzz. Let the instrument give you the note. And all of them, within a month or so, had figured out how to do it the other way. To be tense, you know? And not all of them. You know, you get a couple that figure it out and keep it easy. But, you know, and you'll have a kid play something, and they'll get that tuning B flat, and it'll sound nice and easy. And then a month later, they can't get it, right? And I have to remind them, you know, you did that your first lesson. You accidentally played that note. And they don't believe it.
Right.
So I'm not sure what it is. I think it's that, you know, don't. I have so many phrases. Don't try. I want lazy trombone players. Sorry, just a second, Rich. Hey, girls. Thank you. Sorry. Keeping the troops in line. But yeah, I've got all these phrases that try to keep them relaxed. I don't know. I think sometimes I talk too much in lessons too. Instead of, I'm doing a little more of this where we just trade notes, where I take a great big breath and play an F that just sounds kind of really relaxed. And then I have them play that back to me, and, you know, just a little bit of note ping pong and, you know, get them to feel more relaxed. It's so hard with, you know, you've got a half hour lesson once a week.
Yeah.
You can do all of this stuff to get them relaxed, and by the end of the lesson, it's not so bad. And then they come back in a week after having practiced, I don't know, anywhere from 1 to 7 times, and it's worse again.
Oh, you're 1 to 7 times. You're thinking positive there. That's good. I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's. I want to go back to when you were teaching in Plano, Texas. And,
yeah, isn't that great name, Plano, Texas?
It's just Plano, Texas.
Yeah.
But it sounded like there was maybe an epiphany there where you, like, you saw that guy come out of the studio, teaching studio, and you thought, man, this could be me in 5-10 years or whatever. And so, like, did you have to make some sort of life goal adjustment? You know?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of us do what's easy, you know, because it's there. And so when I graduated from SMU, I really had no place to go. You know, I had just switched over to bass trombone. I was certainly not at the level to do auditions and things like that for orchestras. And so I was, you know, kind of treading water, and that was the easiest thing to do. You know, I think a lot of people do the easy thing, you know, just because it's there. And if you don't get lucky and have that moment where you see the person come out of the classroom like that or the practice room, you know, you might stay there longer.
Yeah.
But
so like, what do you? You know, this is kind of what I've been talking with a lot of my students. It's like, okay, we have these little goals, but we have a big goal as well, maybe to get into college or just to play trombone at a certain level. But at, you know, how do we, especially my students in college age students or beyond, it's like, how do you keep adjusting your vision for the future and not get complacent, I guess, is the thing. 'Cause it's so easy. Like you said, it's, hey, this is easy. You know, I was moved to Indianapolis, and, you know, I was coming home from a miserable day of teaching private students and going to a gig that wasn't going to pay much. I thought, man, I'm making it here. I'm doing exactly what I set out to do. I could do this for the rest of my life. And then, like, 2 seconds later, I could do this for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had to really kind of readjust my ship, so to speak. So, like, how do you, because you've moved around, now you're in Boston, and, like, you've had a new set of circumstances. throughout your career, and like, how do you readjust your sails to catch the crosswind, or to get pointed to the correct horizon?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of, you have to try to be aware, and then I find that I also need some inspiration, and even if it's I have to be sure that I'm looking for something that inspires me, and that can be just going to a concert or I'm lucky here because we've got three great schools, NEC, Boston Conservatory, and Boston University, that you can go and see concerts for free, master classes and things like that.
Wow.
And then you got the BSO and lots of other orchestras around the area.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the hardest thing about that is just, it's easy to be a sedentary, and I'm kind of an introvert. So there are evenings where I would really like to just, stay inside and read a book or watch a movie or something like that. So, usually I have to make some effort to get myself out to do stuff like
that. Well, that's not easy either.
I mean,
you have to have a pretty focused idea of what you want to do. I mean, like, to go looking for inspiration, I don't think is a phrase that I hear people use a lot.
Yeah. I think as, we talk, I got a 4 and an 8-year-old, and I teach students 4 nights a week. Some nights are a lot of kids, and other nights not.
How many students are you teaching right now?
I've got about 20, 25, somewhere in there. So it's a good amount.
Those
are half hour to hour lessons. Most of them are half hour, and then a smattering of 45 and a couple 1 hours. I've kind of lost my train of thought. So it's easy when you hit 9, 10 o'clock at night some evenings to just decide that, pressing the button on Netflix or reading a book is easier to do than practicing or going out to see a concert or even going out and having a beer or two with somebody else who's in the music business. It does take a little bit of effort to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, it's just hard to go back. I can't tell you how many times I've played the third row shoe. Don't feel like I have anything new to bring to it sometimes,
But you do, but you find something.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing is, it's not just music. Like, I really like going to art galleries, and the books help as well. I wish I was better reading poetry. I can't get into that as much for some reason, but I feel like those are the types of things that dump fresh fodder into your subconscious. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so inspiration doesn't need to necessarily come from a musical experience.
Right, but I feel like I run into a lot of people who that's all they do. Do you run into that too?
Yeah. Yeah, like people that live, breathe, talk. I mean, we've had this conversation before. It's like, what kind of mouthpiece are you playing, and what kind of horn is that? It's like, I don't know, shiny. It's a shiny horn. I don't know. I mean, I know, but I don't really get into it. I went through a brief. I still have your mouthpieces, by the way. I have to get them back to you. But yeah, I went through a very, very brief, exploration of mouthpieces. But I've played like 3 different mouthpieces in my life, and
right.
I don't live and breathe that. And I know people that are just like constantly. I have a list on my cell phone, a note on my phone. That is just recommendations from this one particular guy who every time I see him, hey man, have you checked out this new album? It's like, No, I don't like sit around listening to music all day because I'm playing music all day or whatever. And sometimes I want silence, and sometimes a book is can be just as inspirational or what have you, right, as, than a concert. I mean, sometimes going to a concert is the last thing I want to do. And yeah, it is the last thing I do, quite frankly.
Yeah. And I mean, not to poo-poo my own instrument, but you know, if given a choice to go to a cello concert or a trombone concert, I usually choose the cello concert.
There's no doubt. Unless I knew the trombone player and I accidentally said, yeah, I'll be there.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there are exceptions to that, but...
You know. Sure.
Yeah.
No, that's interesting. I think being open to finding inspiration, you know, I know a lot of people, I'm sure you do too, that are just like, they're not curious about anything else. Before we continue with our conversation, I'd just like to take a moment and thank you for listening to the Have You Heard podcast, What It Takes, a podcast within a podcast. You can find more interviews, great music, album reviews, some history, and a whole lot more at www.haveyouheardjazz.com. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/haveyouheardjazz. And you can certainly send us an email at hyhjazz@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and now let's continue our conversation. You know, do you think having kids helps you be curious about the world because you kind of can see the world that they're discovering through their eyes?
At times having kids is just, you know, frustrating, and you can feel like my wife Leslie knows that when I get to the end of the day and haven't had enough practice time, that's when I get cranky. So I have gotten better about, and both of my kids are really good about playing by themselves for a while. And as long as I don't get sucked into, you know, something else in the morning, if I get a little half hour or 45 minute practice session, then I'm off to a better day. And then I am more open to, exploring with them, playing games, getting outside and things like that. But otherwise, you could probably track my stress level throughout the day, just kind of a continual upswing. Parabolic upswing towards the evening if I haven't touched the horn. So
yeah,
and yeah. I've tried to break that error. I remember somebody when I was at Indiana University working, somebody asked me, you know, would you be okay if you didn't play the trombone anymore? I was like, oh yeah, you know, I'd probably be able to work through that. And then I took my lunch break and went across the hall to the recital hall. What's that? Was our recital hall? Just the one of the main old building.
Yeah, it's the recital hall.
It was just called the recital hall.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the recital hall, and it was open, and I just, you know, played through a couple parts of a Bach cello suite here and there, and then I walked back into the office. I was like, no, I lied. I can't give this up. So that's that same thing. You know, I think when I get to the end of the day, even though there are days where I'm like, I'm not going to practice today, and that feels good. But, you know, you start the day and you're like, I got to practice. And if it doesn't happen, then you just get,
yeah.
If you like off the hook at the beginning of the day, that's fine. But, yeah, as far as the kids go, it can be hit or miss. There are some times where you do dumb things all day and do puzzles and things like that. And then other times where there's something more interesting that happens.
So. Right, right. Well, can you I'm interested in like the career that you've put together for yourself out in the Massachusetts in the MA.
Mm-hmm.
The 06822. What's your zip code? No, don't have to tell us this your zip code, but I think that's my mom's zip code. but like, you went to a brand new area. You didn't know anybody there. And just a few years later, you know, you're teaching, you're working, you're playing. I mean, like, how did you go about doing that? And, like, how did you get into the mindset of, like, okay, I've just got to – because you said you're introverted, and you really
–
introverts aren't going to be going out and, you know, tracking down gigs and players and stuff like that. So how did you go about doing that?
Well, it was a little bit longer route than that. So when I came to Miami, or I came to Massachusetts to work at the Walnut Hill School, which is a boarding school for the arts. I'm just about 20 minutes away from here. And I was doing admissions and things like that. And I initially used it as an opportunity to start playing, but it was a full-time job plus, you know, mm-hmm. so that some weeks are, you know, 50, 60 hours. And then I was doing my doctoral at Indiana University and didn't pass some exams at one point and realized that I had gotten so far afield from actually playing. The last exams that I took, I had taken a month off of the trombone. I didn't touch it at all. And after I didn't pass those exams, I realized I was as far as I had ever been from my true goal, which was to be a great trombone player. So I hung that up and the doctoral pursuit and
quite dramatically, if I remember.
Yeah, that was kind of fun.
Talk about that a little bit, because that's like one of my favorite stories to tell people.
So,
I mean, I don't go around telling everybody, but appropriate.
Yeah. So it was my oral exams, and they were completely fair, and I wasn't prepared as well, and I don't know. To this day, I don't know if I wasn't focused or I wasn't in it or what. There are parts of it I did great. The jazz portion, there was one of the things I was supposed to study was the Stan Kenton Artistry and Rhythm mm-hmm. Album. And, you know, that those portions went fine. And to this day, I think I feel a little bit more excited by jazz than classical. So anyway, other parts did not go well. And I did not pass. And the on my plane flight back, I went from Indy to Midway, Chicago, and had a layover there. And at that layover, I took all of my notes. I kind of decided I needed a line in the concrete. I took all my notes.
A line in the tarmac.
Right in the tarmac there in Midway. And threw all of my notes into the garbage can.
Oh, man.
And this is probably, you know, years worth of notes.
Yeah.
So, and then got on the flight and realized that there's no way I could get those notes back. It was great. Very different than throwing them in the garbage at home.
Right.
And after that, I figured out that also that the job at Walnut Hill wasn't helping because I was practicing once a day, but again, not really getting much to do other than that. So I hung that up as well. Leslie and I were dorm parents at the time there, which meant we were living rent free, which enabled that. And that's a huge thing living on the East Coast is, you know, having money in order just to get your, get rent paid and things like that. And then I started working out at Shires. And putting together, when I left there, I was building bass, trombone, valve sections. And my goal was to kind of three-part, you know, be working at Shires, start teaching, and start gigging. And the goal was that at some point I would have too much teaching or gigging or both, and I'd have to hang up Shires. As interesting as that was, I like building things, and I'm good with my hands and met a lot of great people out there. But after it was about 5 years, 5-6 years, that it got to a point where that was happening. I had enough teaching through local schools. And most of that came through people that I knew at Shires because they liked to hire trombone players and trumpet players. So all those people were kind of my connections to gig, including Steve Shires himself. I've played a few times in his church. So,
wow.
So yeah, that was kind of where my in started there. And I did send out, you know, I made some form letters and put together my resume and sent those out to various school districts, just saying that I was in the market to do some teaching, and I've been doing that for, you know, many years, and I enjoy it too. So, yeah, and so I would say certainly that in terms of what I'm doing now, 7/8 of my regular money coming in is from teaching, and then the other eighth is from. There's only one group that I'm in, the Tom Newtley Big Band, which is basically a dance band, a swing band, a 15-piece band.
Wow.
And that's a lot of fun. Like I said, the jazz, when I play jazz, I feel it's strange. Since I've had less training in jazz, it stresses me out less. I feel like it's okay if I make a mistake, mm-hmm. which I don't feel like it happens more often than when I'm playing classical, but I'm just more laid back about it.
Right.
So that's the only regular gig that I have that I'm, you know, a member of. But then I'm, you know, I'm on call lists for subs. You know, Portland Symphony, Plymouth. I've played a few times in Albany. When Toby and Steve got in town, I did play a couple times at the for the Boston Pops Esplanade, which is kind of the run out version of the Boston Pops. So if you go to see the Boston Pops play in, I don't know, Lowell or Springfield or things like that, that's usually the Esplanade Orchestra,
okay.
which is associated with the Boston Pops, but you'd be surprised if more than 10 of the players in there were Boston Symphony Orchestra guys.
Okay.
Or ladies.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I've kind of kept myself honest more recently is by taking lessons with the bass trombone player for the BSO, James Markey, who is an exceedingly nice person.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah,
that's good really to know.
Nice guy.
You know, the thing that I'm kind of I'd like to. I don't know. Like when I hear you talk, it's just like you. Any obstruction in front of you just kind of seems like, and I know you personally pretty well, and just like big life changes. It's like, yeah, and then I did that and this, and now I'm doing this. You know, it's like I think a lot of people would like throwing notes away from a doctorate and getting on a plane saying, well, I'll never see those again. I mean, that's like, I think most people would just quit everything and just like go work at a clothing store, or a shoe store or something, you know?
Yeah.
But like, it just seems like to me, like, you know, like it makes sense, everything that you just said, and everything, you know, kind of falls into place. But, you know, you just, it's almost a nonchalance about it. And I, you know, I'm just curious, like, if what influenced you to become just like let roll with the punches, if you will, you know, or like the whole, you know, the door closes but a window opens or whatever positive affirmation thing that you subscribe to. But you know, what got you to that point? I mean, how did you get to that positive thinking? Because it's so easy to think negatively in the music industry, in the music business.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I was in the rental van driving to start my master's down at SMU. I had everything, you know, stacked up into a van and driving down from Ohio to Texas. And it's just kind of exciting, that feeling like you're not 100% sure what's going to come next. And to this day, when summer comes around, most people start to feel relaxed. I still feel a little antsy when summer comes around, because that's when I always associated with life change, career change, like moving, going someplace new and starting again. You get that feeling when you do anything exciting and new, right? That feeling in your belly or wherever, you know, you're like, I'm not sure how this is going to go. But, you know, for the most part, those are always, sound cliche, those are your learning experiences, but those are fun. That's when you have stories to tell.
Yeah.
You know, And I've since read, you know, I remember there was a book that somebody had written, and they had on a dust jacket about the things that he had done. He had been like, he had been a commercial fisherman, and then he had done, I can't remember. He'd done so many different things, and that just sounded cool. I liked that. Just like, you know, you spend, I don't know, 5-10 years figuring something out, and then you're kind of like, okay, well, I kind of know this. Should I go do something else now? You know, I think, again, it kind of comes down to that, you know, being comfortable where you are. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe something you want to do when you're 80, but I don't know about all your life.
Right. If you could go back and change anything in your life, or give yourself a piece of advice when you were undergrad to grad to doctorate, moving around,
yeah,
I mean, what advice would you give yourself to change anything, if there is anything that you could or would change?
Yeah, I've read enough sci-fi that I know that, you know, changing one thing is going to put everything down the tubes, and I'm pretty happy with where I am right now. I don't know. It might be to go out and, you know, experience more museums and concerts and things like that. But I know that some of that was also, you know, I've certainly not gone to concerts so that I could go out and have beers with friends too. And those are, you know, some of those evenings are very valuable too. I've got great stories from that. Not being the person who's stuck in a practice room at all hours of the day.
Right.
I think maybe I would be smarter about how I practiced. And I recently heard a story about there's a friend of mine who's a trumpet teacher and player, and he said that his student will practice trumpet for half an hour, and then practice piano for half an hour, and then practice trumpet for half an hour, and then go back to piano and switch back and forth. And this is like I think he's in middle school or something like that. And we both just looked at each other like, that is one of the smartest things I have ever heard.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you're kind of keeping yourself fresh the whole way through, just mentally and physically.
Right.
I think some more of that. And I wish I had taken more advantage of the jazz program at IU too, with Mr. Baker there. I remember being the only trombone player in that class.
Oh, yeah.
That was great. I remember being in there with, like, you know, however many students there are at the beginning, like 80. Yeah. And thinking that I was hiding in the middle back, and realizing after a couple of weeks, it's like, you know, he knows I'm here. I'm not fooling anybody. And then that next class, I sat in the front row with Bob White. And I might be remembering, conflating this to be more than it was, but Mr. Baker walked in, and he plunked all of his big stack of papers down on top of the piano, looked over at me and just kind of smiled and, all right.
Yeah. Oh no, I don't think you're playing that up at all. I'm sure that absolutely happened, for sure. That's awesome.
So yeah, I would say, you know, being a little, I don't know. I can't say that there's anything I wouldn't have done, you know, as painful as parts of IU were. You know, I'm here in Massachusetts with my wife and kids because of it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's really maybe it's a poor question to ask, but because it's always like, well, if I do change something in the past, you know, the present would be completely different, and I wouldn't maybe be where I am now.
Yeah.
But, and that would be sad, but, you know, I don't know. I always find it, I know I would tell myself to like, not be so shy. I think when I first got to college, I didn't really talk to anybody for a while. Mm. And I joined a funk band, and that dressed in crazy outfits, and they told me to wear something crazy for my first gig with them.
Yeah.
And I wore like a olive green shorts and a red shirt. That was crazy for me. And then fast forward a couple years, and it was way different. But it took me a long time to get out of my shell. And I think I would have had more opportunities, or I would have experienced more things had I been more extroverted in the early years of my college life.
Right.
But
you know, what else would that have, you know, who else would you have not have bumped into?
Right. Well, that's true. Yeah. I don't know. I really don't know. See, that's where science fiction, reading science fiction, messes you up, man, because the wings of a butterfly.
Right.
Or whatever.
Right.
Okay, I just have one last question for you, Andy. And how do you stay so dang darn positive, man? Like, you're always, there's always a smile on your face, and you're always, I mean, you're not always super, your whole life has not just been like blindly smiling through everything, but I mean, like, you're always a positive guy, and you always have really great advice and things to dole out, if you'll forgive the pun, to other people. But just like, how do you do that? Like, do you force yourself into that stream of thinking, and then once you're there, it's easy to stay there? Or,
well, I don't know. I think that, you know, the part of it is that when I'm talking with people, I'm not, so I can get kind of dark at home and, you know, get into funks for a week or so here or there. But I don't know, maybe it's just that kind of Midwest upbringing that when you're out in the world, you're supposed to be happy and cheerful and don't drag others down. I think I am generally a happy person, but, I tend not to get, I don't generally get, I guess you're right. I don't get dark for months at a time.
I mean, it's not like, oh man, Andy's such a drag. He's gonna be dark or whatever. I mean, I know nobody says that. Who's on the gig tonight? Andy Knight. Oh, cool. Everybody says that instead of, oh, dude, what is he gonna complain about this time? You know?
Yeah. Well, that's advice that I took to heart from Dominic Spira.
Oh.
Never talk bad about the gig where you are. You know, if you're gonna take somebody's money, smile while you do it. So that's just practical advice there.
Yeah, that's true.
But you know, I think that I don't know. I think part of it too, you know, kids help in a way because they force you to you can't fall into yourself too much because somebody else has got to be fed and you got to pick them up and you know, so that, you know, it's hard to be supremely introverted unless you're supremely introverted and depressed if you've got kids.
Right.
You know, it's you know, it may sound a little cliche too, but you know, if you tickle a 4-year-old, the sound that comes out of that 4-year-old is that's just like pure sunshine.
I think I'm gonna have to change the name of this blog series podcast series, because I interviewed Aaron Rahm, is a trumpet player, a friend of mine.
Right.
And he actually used the phrase "vomit sunshine" when we're talking about being happy on a gig or just having a positive attitude. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one of the things that I catch myself. So a few years ago is when I had this, I picked up this Newtley Band gig, and I hadn't played in a jazz band for quite a few years. And I was just, you know, grinning ear to ear at practices and things like that. And I catch myself now on gigs being like, you know, I texted you last night. I stopped myself about halfway through, and I think that's, you know, just trying to be self-aware. Maybe that's the best advice, you know. It could be, I could be at home watching TV instead of out with this 15-piece band playing Sinatra tunes and Nelson Riddle stuff and things like that. There's some really great charts. So, you know, suck it up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah. But, I mean, you've had that perspective for a long time. I think I had to acquire that perspective. And it didn't happen until, you know, four or five years ago when it really just hit me. Like, man, I'm playing my instrument, getting paid, and the house is packed. And why am I dark? Why am I upset about this?
Right.
You know?
Well, I think it's one of those things, and in some ways, college does it to us, where, you know, you enter Indiana University or wherever, and they think that, you know, how can we give you a gig that's going to get you into an orchestra? Mm-hmm. And kind of everybody has that expectation at some level. And then when that doesn't happen, I tell students, you have a better chance of being president of the United States than becoming the first chair trombone player of the New York Phil. Because at least that has to turn over every 4 years or eight or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, so it's just not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I think if you set up that expectation, you know, being more flexible is good.
Certainly. Certainly. Well, Andy, thank you for spreading your sunshine with me today. I always love talking to you about everything, and you always lift my spirits, that's for sure.
Well, thanks.
I need to be in. I'll be better. I'll be better keeping in touch with you, man. How many times have I said that to you through the years? I mean,
we ping pong back here and there, and one of us eventually drops it.
Yeah, the volley gets stopped somehow. But, yeah, man. Well, thanks for talking with me, and I really appreciate it, Andy. Keep doing what you're doing. Just keep spreading it. Keep spreading that sunshine, my friend.
Thank you, Rich. Thanks for talking.
Yeah.
You have been listening to the Have You Heard podcast, What It Takes. We are always working on new material, and we'll be posting conversations and much more at haveyouheardjazz.com. The theme music is by vibraphonist and drummer Mitch Shiner. For more information about Mitch and everything he is up to, please visit his website, shinymusic.com. That's S-H-I-N-E-Y music.com. He's really wonderful, and his music is stellar. As for us, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/haveyouheardjazz. And we would love to read your email if you send it to us at hyhjazz@gmail.com. As always, we appreciate your time, your support, and thank you for listening.